Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymeer Church of Christ.
So where's the clock? He said, oh no, they've put it right up there where you can see it on the podium. We are Church of Christ. And so the clock is right here, but it looks like it stopped. So, hey, I have a message for you. And when I give this message, I've been asked to come to different places and to give this particular message quite a few times. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. In Nashville, I've been around so long up there that, you know, a lot of people are familiar with what I do, but I'm Joey Spann. I got out of college and went straight to Ezel Harding and started coaching and teaching and youth ministering, and was at Ezel for over 30-something years with a three-year break where I went to Old Hickory Church as a full-time youth minister, but missed the school atmosphere, so I came back to school. Went back into the teaching. Told my wife, actually, that I would work at H.G. Hills on weekends if I had to, but I wanted to be back with the kids. And so I got back into teaching and kept doing that. And then as time went on, took the pulpit ministry at different churches and am now a pulpit minister and also an elder where I'm at. I've coached basketball, girls basketball, at Ezel Harding. Most of my time. I've coached the last 6 years at Good Pasture. I've had some real good girls. God blessed me with some real good ball players. Two of my girls are in the audience, so I see Malia's left. She coming back? Okay. Yeah, you hope so. I've heard great things about y'all and y'all's ministry through the years. And I'll talk to you later about it. But I've never met you. But I've tried to keep up with my girls, and I've heard a lot of stuff about your ministry through the years. And Amy and the Wiley family over here, I've known them for so many years. On February 28th of 2011, we were playing Lipscomb. I was a good pastor coach, and we're playing Lipscomb in a region semifinal game. The loser of this game goes home. The season's over. And those of you who love sports, you'll understand some of the things I'm going to say. And those of you who don't, I don't know. You won't, I guess. But we don't like Lipscomb a whole lot. I say a whole lot because I don't know you. I don't know to be totally honest or not. There's that competition, and when I went into Lipscomb's gym from Good Pasture, I knew as many people on the Lipscomb side through my church work and different things as I knew more over on the Lipscomb side than I literally knew in our crowd. But there's that competition level. When I was at Ezel Harding, we always played Lipscomb. And usually when you played, it meant something, and it was always tough, and it was always hard, and it was always gritty. It was never that friendly church picnic ball game. We just didn't play those things. And in fact, their coach and I were competitors for years and years and years, and we were friendly acquaintances, if you know what I mean. How you doing? Good. And we would talk a little bit and go on, that bumper car relationship where we bump into each other and then go on. But this night on February 28th would change that. Loser goes home, a lot riding on this game. They're a lot better than we are that particular year. But we are up at halftime 14-12. It was a horrible game. First quarter, the referee, are there any referees here? I didn't think so, because surely they would have responded a while ago if there had been any refs here. But this ref is a member of the church, song leader at Tusculum. I know him, you know. And so I talked to him a little bit. he called a foul on our best girl, and our best girl was better than their best girl. But after that, it was all downhill. So she carried a big load. He called a quick foul on her, and I questioned him in a brotherly manner. What was that about? Why? What'd you see? And he just ignores me and he reports, and he calls another one pretty quick. First quarter, she's sitting over there with me. And every time he passes me, I greet him with a holy kiss, like Romans 16 says. And I talk to him as he passes me. And how are we supposed to win this? Now you've set her next to me. And he just looks at me and just goes on. But it's all well, it's not all in fun either. It was serious. Half ends. We're up 14-12 with my best girl now going to go back in the ball game. We go down in at Lipscomb. Remember how you go down into the dungeon to the locker rooms way down in the back? We went all the way down there and went into this little closet they call a locker room. And we're in there and we're talking, but we're up and I'm not yelling. I hadn't been upset. I might have said something to him as we passed each other, but no yelling. Go down there and just have a talk to him. We start to head back up and the horn blows. And anyone here who's coached anyone knows as you're starting back up, when you hear the horn, you just start yelling, go, 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 go. Starters report in. And you're doing all that. And they're all hustling. We're going up these steps and turning up these other concrete steps. And I get up to the top of the steps and look up here, and there's 2 minutes to go. So they blew the horn early. So I slow down a little bit, and I'm walking across. And I pass Ernie, Coach Smith of Lipscomb, and David Carter is a good friend of mine. His brother's my assistant coach when I was at Ezel Harding. David and I have been friends for 25 years probably, and he's Ernie's assistant coach. And I'm closer to him than I'm actually Ernie. And so I'm passing by, and Dave says to me as I pass by their bench, man, it's an ugly game. And I said, reminds me of some of the girls I dated in high school. Just being funny. And I turned around, and I'm at the half court now, and I'm at the scores table, and I'm getting ready to go to our bench. And all of a sudden, I get dizzy. And if you ever had vertigo, the room sort of tumbles. And I remember reaching out and just touching the scores table. Just, you know how you do it to catch your balance. And the younger ones, you'll know later. But you just touch something just to get your balance. And I remember touching the scores table and thinking, what was that? It's the last thing I remember. The rest I was told. They said that I was right on half court line. They said that I just fell straight back. My wife was there, and some of the others here may have been there. And they said that I fell straight back. My head was the first thing to hit, and it made a real thud. And of course, people were out getting popcorn and stuff. And their team's up. Both teams are up. Refs are coming out. And I fall out right there at half court. And my heart stopped beating and literally died right there at half court at David Lipscomb, which was enemy territory. Who wants to die at Lipscomb? And I know there's probably some Lipscomb graduates here. I'm a Lipscomb graduate. It's just a competitive thing. Ever since I left college there, I've been going against them. And it's competition. I don't want to die at Lipscomb. I don't want to die anywhere. But if I'm going to die at Lipscomb, at least I'm ahead 14-12. And what's sad is that literally when they were rolling me out, I'll skip ahead a little bit here since I mentioned that. As they're rolling me out, I remember thinking, we're ahead. That's sick. That's the coach in me. We're ahead. Okay. I'm ready to go. I pass Ernie in heaven, if he makes it to heaven, I don't know. But if I pass him, he tells me, he said, Joey, I hear you're speaking about me all over the city. I say, if you want rebuttal, get them to invite you instead of me. You die and do this. But, I'd be happy passing Ernie in heaven saying, hey, had you last time we played. But when I died, I fell out there. My wife was the first one down because she was watching me come across the court. She's always concerned about me. And I had no pains, no warning. Just got that dizzy, and it was gone. Hit the floor. That night, I always dressed up for ball games and stuff. My generation did that. And I had my favorite three-piece suit on. Blue with orange pinstripes and orange tie. Everything matched. And so I loved this suit, vest. They cut my pants off. Why? Can't you unsnap them and pull them down? I don't know. What, did it save you a second or two? I'll wait. I'm going nowhere. They cut my pants. The first thing my son told me, because he knows me, we're in the hospital, you know, and I'm sore away. He said, "Dad, they cut your pants off." First thing he told me, he's 29, they cut your pants off, man. They ruined your suit. I've still got that jacket and vest hanging up in my closet where I can see it. Don't have the pants. Don't ever wear it. But it's just sort of a memory thing. When I put that on that morning, I had no idea that was the last thing I was going to wear. Had no idea that's what I would die in. You probably won't know. As you're dressing the day that you're going to die, you probably won't know that. I didn't. They said I hit the ground with a thud. And Peggy came running out, and other people came out. Fortunately, we were praying at Lipscomb, and four nurses came out. The assistant coach for Lipscomb, his wife, Angel Carter, was a nurse, and a parent for a Lipscomb girl was a nurse, and one of our teachers was a nurse, and one of our parents also was a nurse. All worked at different hospitals. Isn't that odd? And they came down there, and a doctor was in the audience. And he came down there. And he didn't even have anybody in the game. His daughter is now coaching at Lipscomb, but she was a graduate from Good Pasture, and I asked him later, I said, "Why'd you go?" He said, "I don't know, I just decided to go." And there they were working on me. A woman in there, Patricia Binkley, used to teach at Ezel Harding with me, now was at Lipscomb. She left the Lord and went over there to Lipscomb, and she was sitting in the corner. It was her job to get the defibrillator to somebody. And within a minute, they had it on me, and it jumped. My entire body came off the ground, and somebody asked me, "Did you see a light?" No, I didn't. Does that bother you? A little bit. A little bit. Somebody says, "God's not through with you yet, Joey." I said that, or "I didn't see that light. Maybe he's giving me another chance to find that light." And I told somebody, if they pay more, I can learn to see that light. If they give more for a talk, if I can get out on it. But I didn't see a light. I was gone. The ambulance was there quickly. They took me off, and I went to Vanderbilt Hospital. I learned so much from that day, from that moment, for the next week as I stayed in the hospital at Vanderbilt. It was an unbelievable experience. These lessons I learned. I learned about, and I knew these. You know, I don't know if I've learned a new lesson in a long time, but I'm reminded of many lessons that I've had in my past. And this one, the providence of God, God's hand at work, God passing through your life and you realizing it. That moment where you say, just like the apostles had to do so many times, like when he was walking on water to him, or when he calmed the storm, or when he fed the 5,000, when they had to have backed back and said, "You know who that is? And he's in our lives." Sometimes in this world we're so busy, and we all are, and we have so many people depending on us and pulling us, and sometimes we forget to recognize the presence of God. We forget to remember that we are His dwelling place, and that His hand is on us. And it was brought so clear to me. I've had it many times in my life where I said, that was God. God did that for me. But this time was big time. The providence of God. How the whole night laid out. The week before we played at Vol State. It's a junior college in Gallatin. They couldn't have found a defibrillator if, you know, well, my life did depend on it. Had I gone down a week earlier, I would have just been dead. But I go down in a gym where they have a defibrillator, not just a defibrillator in a gym, which is now law to have one around it, but they had a woman whose job, and my friend, whose job it was to use that, be ready to grab it. You know, my name is on that defibrillator. And I teased Ernie, Coach Smith, my name's in his gym and his name isn't. And I've let him know that. Mine's on a plaque right over there. It's a defibrillator plaque, but that's okay. It's in this gym. But there she was. There were two of the best trainers in Nashville. One of them, our trainer, Chris Nottie, is a Hall of Fame trainer. He's there. I have a doctor who's, I guess he's 70 years old, isn't he? But still practicing right there. I have four nurses. Three of them are cardiac nurses, and they're all down there on me. And my wife's a nurse, and she told me, she said, Joey, it was like a trauma unit. Everything gathered right there on the floor. And everything in the gym got quiet, I'm told. And every time I speak to someone in Nashville, someone comes up to me and says, I was at that game. And they give me a bit of information that I didn't know before. I was told, you know, that there was prayers being offered up all over the place in the gym. It was totally quiet and that they were working. And one of the nurses, one of my player's parents said to me, she said, when EMTs picked you up to carry you off, she said, I stood up. And everyone has told me, you could hear them talking. He's gone. He's not breathing. And anywhere in the gym, you could hear them. I've got a pulse. I got a pulse. She said, the nurse said, that when she stood up, she said, Coach, it was so quiet in there that I thought everyone had gone out. I thought we were alone. And I turned around and everybody was there. They carried me out and Mike McPherson, you remember Mike, Coach McPherson, he was there and he'd come down to me and Coach Smith, remember Miss Smith? She came down to me before the game, and we're going to go out and eat after the game. And Mike coaches at Lipscomb and stuff, and that rivalry is just really just that. I love all those people. I just hate the teams. But Mike's going to go, we're going to go eat afterwards. Well, I die. He goes on and eats. He eats. How do you do that? And he said, well, I wasn't going to operate on you. So he went and ate, and he came back. But as we were leaving, he told Peggy, you tell Joey he owes his life to Lipscomb. And I said, oh, I'm glad that God didn't give me that choice beforehand. Do you want to die or do you want to owe your life to Lipscomb? That's a tough one. Angel, the Carter, the nurse, told her husband, friends, they're staying there, and he told me later, or she did, that as they were taking me out, she didn't even know it was me until she got up and looked down and realized it was Joey. And she said, David, he shouldn't be alive. And he said, what? He said, he shouldn't be alive. 95%, she's one of those cardiac people at Vanderbilt, and she said 95% of the people die. You can't bring them back. They're gone. And she said only a portion of the 5% and my wife told me 16% or so of the 5% will make it at the hospital. She said it's a miracle. He ought to be dead. And I appreciate the fact that God didn't let that happen. But Coach Carter's kids were around him, and I've been with them as they grew up, and they were crying. And he said to them, he said, hey, if Coach Spann makes it, it'd be all right. And if he doesn't make it, it's going to be all right. To live your life in such a way that when you're at that point of death, and if you stay, you stay, and if you go, you go. That's what each one of us is supposed to do. We know that. Live each day as if it were. You know that. Be ready always, because you're going to come like a thief in the night. I know that. I didn't know it that morning when I was putting that tie on. I didn't know the thief was coming now. I knew I was going to be dead tonight. And God's mighty hand came down. Something else I learned was the power of prayer. This clock is broken. Bad. The power of prayer. And I'm going to do this real fast. Inside that gym, my son asked me later. He said, Dad, do you think maybe prayer saved you? I said, what are you talking about, Mike? He said, well, I mean, you ought to be dead. And yet all those prayers were being offered. Do you think maybe God heard the prayers and answered them? Now, where would he get that? Well, from every time he ever heard me speak on prayer, his entire life, I preach that, that God hears us, that God answers prayers. And he said, do you think it could have been prayers? But sadly, from my point, it's the first time. It was one of those Andy Griffith moments where Opie was teaching Andy a lesson. My son says, do you think prayer saved you? And I said, well, yeah, it could. That could be. That night in the gym, the announcer said to everybody in the audience, would you all mind please praying? They got in little prayer groups. Now, I didn't know that. Of course, I was dead. But don't laugh, I was dead. And I was down there, and someone later after I spoke somewhere said, you know why? He said, everybody was praying. Do you know the Lipscomb girl, my girls were ushered off the floor real quick, like, because of the emotional. You know, they saw their coach die. My wife saw her husband die. My friends who were around me saw me die. They took my girls downstairs, and the Lipscomb girls and coaches. And I have a hard time, even now, not getting emotional. And I apologize for that, but just, the Lipscomb team came into my locker room and held hands with my girls and prayed together. When I was on the floor, Coach Smith was just a few feet away, I was told. He was down on his hands and his knees, praying out loud. Went to the hospital. Word spread through Twitter and all that stuff. And I've worked with a lot of churches, spoke at a lot of youth events, and coached a lot of teams. And I have a lot of people throughout Nashville. And they began to get word of it, and they started coming over to the hospital. And Twitter was exploding about it among people who know me and all the former girls and students and stuff, and prayers were being offered everywhere for me. And I'm so appreciative of it. Later, I got better, of course, and come June, I wanted to go to basketball camp with my girls. And I go out. Every church I spoke at, they'd say, you know, we prayed for you during that time. It's the first time I've ever been here. Yeah, but someone asked us to pray for that coach. one of my people went back home to Salina, went to church up there, and the guy got up there. He's a Salina coach, and he's a member there, and he had them praying for me. We beat him for the state championship. That's why I remember him. There they were praying for me. Went to basketball camp. This referee starts walking toward me. And I don't hold them as enemies anymore. And they're walking toward me, but I'm watching. And so I said, just saying, but I know I don't know him, but I'm afraid I'm supposed to. But I reach out my hand, he reached out, Coach, man, it's good to have you here. And I said, well, thank you. I'm excited. You know, we hope we play good. He grabs that two-hand handshake. He said, no. And he did that. We're glad you're here. And still holding my hand, now it hits me what he's talking about. And that guard sort of comes down and says, well, thank you. I appreciate it. And he says, you know, holding my hand, we prayed for you at our church all the time. Man, it's good to have you here. Let go of my hand. And I'm thinking, you'd think I would think, oh, that is great. But I turned to my assistant and said, now how am I going to yell at that guy? You know? What? Oh, you missed a walk and I'm going to come down on him? No. I can't coach anymore. I've had him come up to me. Evidently, 33 refs called that game because a bunch of them, if I was calling that ball game, you died at. I said, well, that's good. A lot of prayers. Another thing that I noticed, the providence of God, the power of prayer, and I'll just close with this, just the power of love. Vanderbilt Hospital has a waiting room when you go in that middle floor about like this. They tell me that it filled up, and they finally had to go. They came out on Friday night, and they came out, and kids from different uniforms, and the guy outside stopped my son, didn't know who my son was, and said, listen, what's going on there? I see referees going in. I see Franklin Road girls, Nashville Christian girl. I see girls from Lipsk. I see Ezel Harding girls. I see, what's going on in there? Who's in there? And the guy said, my son said, my father's in there. And he ran on in, and it got to such a degree that the officials came out at the hospital and asked them if they would go to another location so other people could use the place. And they emptied it out, and it filled back up again. And they said they emptied it out twice. Now what that is just an outshowing of love. A friend of mine said, Joey, you had the opportunity to see your funeral and still be alive. Usually, you know, the flowers after they die, the tears and the appreciation after they're gone. But you get it now. The hospital was so full. The nurses literally did this over and over, and I'm not exactly, they stuck their head in. Now, I'm still pretty weak. They stick their head in and they say, who are you? Which concerns you when your nurse asks you that question, because you want your nurse to know who you are. Maybe I need another nurse. But she says, who are you? I said, what do you mean? Well, who are all these people? They were lined up so many, and they made them go two by two, shoulder to shoulder. You know that door that's ICU or CCU or something where they can't go in? They did anyways. The line went down that hall, and those nurses were giving them that nurse look you get when you're not supposed to be in the hall, and they give you that look, but they didn't care. And they were lined all the way out. So, and we finally had to ask them to limit just 5 minutes and to go. And I was on morphine and stuff. I remember some, I don't remember some, and I told some of my friends, if you didn't come, just tell me you did, I won't know. But the love that was there, one of my girls came by, and they're going over to play Lipscomb on Sunday, because you gotta finish this game. And without me, and Ernie practiced on Saturday. That's horrible. I would have given her the game up, but no, not him. And I'm teasing when I say that. I'd have practiced on Saturday. But one of my girls came by and said, Coach, we're going, I do remember this, we're going to win this game. We're dedicating this game to you. I said, sweetheart, come here. She went, and she's the sweetest girl on the team. She said, yes, sir. I said, I don't care about that game. I died. Just go and have fun. Just have fun. Just a game. They lost. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter. You know when they went in the gym where all the banners were hanging about Mustangs eat cougar meat and stuff? You know how high school teams do that. They had taken down. Lipscomb had taken all that down and had filled the gym with signs and banners that expressed salt. They brought me one and said, we love Coach Spann. It's amazing what you find. I got called to the city council. We're gonna present a plaque to me. And to Lipscomb people showed up. And Mike Roller's the AD there. He's a friend of mine. And they kept reading it out loud. And everything was about Lipscomb, honoring Lipscomb for saving this coach's life. Honoring Lipscomb. I finally turned around to Mike and I said, hey, Mike, any chance I get to honor y'all, let me know, okay? You need me to do whatever, I'll come do it, man. It's all about y'all. And he laughed, and I said, you know, seriously, we're not going to have a rival anymore, are we? And he said, not as long as you're alive. And every game since then, we play hard. We play to win. But the losing coach comes over smiling and shakes the other coach. I've lost and he's lost. And it's totally different. The providence of God, the power of prayer, the presence of love took me dying to get that and to realize that. Close with this. Went back to Good Pastor about 3 weeks later and they had the TV cameras all there and all, you know, and I spoke to the kids and thanked them, and TV person said, we want to interview you after. I said, okay. So she's interviewing me and she said, I want to ask you a question. She said, how does it feel to be among that special group of people? I said, I'm sorry. And then she gave me that percentage that I already knew, 95%, da, 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 da. She said, how does it feel to be part of that special group? And I said, well, let me tell you, you won't put it on TV, but I've always been part of that special group. I'm a Christian. My God's eyes are always on me. His hand is always there for me. Now, she didn't put that on TV, but she did put this. I said, man, I'll tell you one thing. It was a neat thing to actually feel the hand of God on your life. And it is. Who are you? Who are you? And this was my answer to those nurses. I'm just a coach and a preacher and a teacher who's been blessed with knowing a lot of good people. But more than that, I'm just a Christian. Watched over, blessed by, provided by God Almighty. Special? You bet. Thankful? Forever. Looking forward to the day that I do get to go on, but grateful for a second chance to do more. I appreciate you listening. Would you pray with me just for a second? Father, thank you so much for the blessing you give us, and I thank you, Lord, for second chances and third chances and so on. You are so loving and so patient. God, I ask you to put inside each one of us a desire to not just know your presence, but to share that knowledge with other people. I ask your blessings upon Danny Adcox, and you help him and his kids and his wife. Bless those at this great church, Father. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you so much.